And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
It turns the brains into guacamole.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara Counties. Every show has the theme, and today's theme is Deep Dive. Each of my guests is giving us an in-depth look at his subject. My next guest is the founder and president of a nonprofit organization which investigates the causes of extremism. He's interviewed more than 100 Islamic radicals, asking them probing questions about their inner lives, their deepest faith, and what it was that ultimately drove them to jihad. We'll discuss his findings contained in his book, Terrorists in Love, which opens a really fresh window on the realm of violent extremism. And if you have a question or if you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. Ken Ballin is the president and founder of Terror Free Tomorrow, a nonpartisan, not-for-profit organization which investigates the causes of extremism. Since 2004, Terror Free Tomorrow's research has been featured in the New York Times, the Washington Post, on CNN, CBS, NBC, and has been cited by Presidents Barack Obama, Bill Clinton, and President George H.W. Bush, among others. Ken has spent two decades on the front lines of law enforcement, international relations, intelligence oversight, and congressional investigation. As a federal prosecutor, Ken successfully convicted international terrorists. He's also prosecuted major figures in organized crime, international narcotics, and one of the first cases in the United States involving illegal finance for Middle Eastern terrorists. Ken has served on the council to the House Iran-Contra Committee under Chairman Lee Hamilton, where he was the lead investigator questioning witnesses during the nationally televised hearing. He's also a regular contributor to CNN and its companion website, CNN.com, and his articles have been published in all of the usual places, the Washington Post, Financial Times, Los Angeles Times, Foreign Policy, etc., etc. Joining us from Washington, D.C., how are you today, Ken?
I'm fine. Thank you for having me on.
Well, what a pleasure to have you on board. Now, how did you arrive at the point where you wrote Terrorists in Love? I mean, tell us your path to get there, from being a prosecutor to founding a nonprofit to interviewing terrorists. I mean, how did you arrive where you arrived?
Well, in some ways, it wasn't such a circuitous path in that as a prosecutor, as a congressional investigator, my main job was interviewing bad guys. I mean, I interviewed hundreds, if not thousands, of criminals, and that's how you prosecute them. I had one organized crime case after the initial arrest. We arrested over 50 people. I interviewed more than half of them at length for months on end, and that's how we found out more to prosecute even more people. So it was something that I had done for nearly two decades. But the book really wrote itself because I went over to these Muslim countries, and we conducted a lot of public opinion polling. And in the course of doing that, I interviewed a lot of radicals and terrorists. And some of the stories, not everyone would open up to me, of course, but some of the stories I heard were so compelling, so totally threw every expectation I ever had, every thought I ever thought I knew out the window, that I felt compelled to write this book and share these very intimate life stories with the American people, because this is not your normal policy book or analytical kind of read. These are the biographies, if you will, what their family life was like, what led them to radicalism, what led them away, as importantly. And so you're really getting six life stories, intimate details about their families, their sex life, their cultural, their religious beliefs, everything. Well, it really lays it out in a way that we've never seen before.
It does, and I want to get into some of those stories, but I still want to get at a fundamental issue, because here you are going into these Islamic countries, and the people that you interviewed are all pathologically anti-American, they're pathologically anti-Semitic, and they're violent. So why did they choose to speak with you?
Well, so were the people I prosecuted in the United States. They were also pathological. So I have a lot of experience dealing with pathological people. I mean, I did this for nearly two decades. Not everyone would open up to me, but there is one topic in the world that is universal. People like to talk about themselves. You get people going, and they will. And what was so interesting about these conversations is that to their fellow Muslims or fellow tribal members, they would never open up in this way because they would lose faith. But to an outsider, in a strange way, some of them felt freer to open up.
Now, that is an interesting thing. Let's talk about some of the stories, because they are fascinating, and I may butcher the pronunciation of some of these names, but describe some of the people that you profiled. There was Ahmed al-Sharia, who is nicknamed Bernie.
You can call him Bernie if you want.
Let's call him Bernie. It's a lot easier for me.
Bernie.
Okay.
Bernie is a very interesting story. Ahmad is his real name. A very interesting story. His family background and what led him is described in the book, but he goes to Iraq, becomes a fighter, becomes unwittingly involved in a suicide attack, and one of the reasons that provoked him to go to Iraq was the images of Abu Ghraib. Anyway, the famous American or infamous American prison. So anyway, he's involved. He's going along in a truck. He does not know it's going to blow up. But about 1,000 yards before the concrete barrier, the truck blows up, and he is kills 8 people. Truck contained 26 tons of liquid explosives.
Wow.
His body is badly burned. He loses the full use of his hands and his legs. His face is completely charred away. He's brought to an Iraqi hospital. They don't know who he is at first. He tells them who he is. They torture him there. Then he's brought to Abu Ghraib, and as he tells me, I'm absolutely petrified. I think I'm going to be tortured. I think I'm going to be treated unfairly. Instead, he is given 30 operations to restore him back to health. He's given physical therapy. And here's what's so interesting. He meets, for the first time in his life, a woman outside of his own family. He's a young man of 19. He never met a woman before because he comes from a very segregated society in terms of gender. He meets a woman for the first time, this American Army nurse. She shows him kindness. She nurses him back to health. He is transformed. As he says to me, I went to Iraq to fight for my Muslim brothers. My Muslim brothers and Al-Qaeda treated me like a piece of rotten meat. They used me. They lied to me. The Americans I went to fight against treated me with kindness, decency, and respect. He became fiercely pro-American in this heart.
Now, that's amazing, and it's an amazing story in the book. One of many that's contained in the book, Terrorists in Love, The Real Lives of Islamic Radicals. I'm talking to Kenneth Ballin, who is the author of that book. Talking about the human aspect, the human element of these people was a fascinating part of the book for me as well. And two characters really stand out in my mind as having the most human interaction. That is Abby and his girlfriend Miriam. Tell us a story about that, sort of the jihadist Romeo and Juliet.
Are indeed a jihadi Romeo and Juliet. Abby falls madly in love with Miriam. We meet through a note that she sends to his sister. He courts her. He literally goes to a window and courts her. This intense romance continues for 5 years, and he wants nothing more, and she wants nothing more than for them to be married. Anyway, there's a small problem with that. In that society, in order for a man to marry a woman, he must pay a bride price or a dowry to the woman's father. Well, Abby didn't have the $20,000 or $30,000 that was the going rate. He only had $8,000. So this girl's father, the girl is 20 years old, marries her off against her will to a man who's 3 times her age. He's over 60 for $35,000. He had more money. And she's married against her will. Abby is completely distraught. He loses the love of his life. And his notion is that if I die in a holy war and fight for God, then I will go to heaven, and in heaven I can marry whomever I want. And so his notion was that if he died in holy war in Iraq fighting for God, he would go to heaven, and then they could get married. Miriam had the same notion. She escaped from this man and thought to go to Iraq as well. It's an amazing story. It's a tragic story. And, of course, when Abby gets to Iraq and he sees Al-Qaeda killing people, the sectarian violence, the corruption and the theft, he realizes it's not a holy war at all, and he escapes from them and comes back, but never was able to reunite with his love.
That's an amazing story. My guest is Ken Ballin. Ken, another story that I found interesting was the Afghan Malik, who went to a madras camp, and he knew that's where he was indoctrinated in extremism. Tell us the story about that, and describe how and why people that you profiled don't feel that they're doing anything wrong, that they're following the right path.
Yeah, well, he was convinced he was following the right path. This man was a Taliban warrior. when the Taliban were in power in Afghanistan, he was part of the religious police. And once we overthrew the Taliban, he's been fighting the Americans in Afghanistan. And he, most importantly, he was a seer to Mullah Omar. So Mullah Omar, he would give Mullah Omar dreams, which Mullah Omar would interpret to decide whether or not to go to battle against the United States. So it, the dreams are determining the course of battle, not the battlefield reality or the strategies of our generals in Afghanistan. That's at least how the other side sees it. So this guy, Malik, was a true believer who felt he was doing the right thing and following the word of God. As he said to me, if I live, I fight against the infidels, meaning us, and if I die, I go to heaven. So for him, it was a win-win either way.
Yeah. I find it interesting, of all the people that you interviewed and you profiled in this, how many of them expressed guilt over what they had done?
Not many. Some did. There's a story in the book of Zedi, who was a kind of a career terrorist for Islam. That's his words, not mine. He had a lot of guilt over what he had done. And in fact, when he talked to me, his story came out almost like a confessional because he felt so much guilt. Some of the people, one in particular, one Taliban fighter, was actually, and I may not have enough time to tell you the story on the broadcast, but he was actually transformed by meeting me. The interaction that I had with him, kind of like what Ahmad had in Saudi Arabia with the American Army nurse, helped change his mind about the course that he was taking, and it's an absolutely amazing story that's in the book, and it was one of the most, it changed him, it also changed me to have this kind of story, now, this kind of interaction. Not all of them will change. That guy Malik we were talking about, the Afghan Taliban who was steered to Mullah Omar, the Taliban leader, I mean, he believes that killing every infidel is he's following the word of God, and talking to me doesn't change that.
My guest is Ken Ballin, author of the book Terrorists in Love, The Real Lives of Islamic Radicals. Let me ask you this question, if I can, Ken. Osama bin Laden is now dead. He was the leader of al-Qaeda and the jihadist movement in general. In what ways will his death impact the entire jihadist movement?
Well, of all the people I interviewed at length, more than 100 I interviewed at length, not a single one of them pointed to Osama bin Laden as their motivation. So I don't think his death will have much of an impact on the movement.
Interesting. Another guest that we've had on the show, Donald Rumsfeld, was on earlier, and he likened the war against al-Qaeda and Islamic extremism to the Cold War. It was a war of attrition. We've got to kill more Islamic terrorists than they can train in these madrasa camps. In what way is that an accurate representation of the situation? Is that overly simplistic? Is it insightful, or is it naive?
Well, I don't think it's entirely correct because, you know, this is not an, you can't kill an idea. You can't take terrorism or tactic. You can't take terrorism in the backyard and shoot it. It just doesn't work. We have to be smarter about how we respond. And in order to be smarter about how we respond, we have to understand what makes the enemy tick, why they fight, and why they can leave it. It's very interesting in this book that many of the people left the movement because of the corruption and the theft and the duplicity and hypocrisy of the al-Qaeda and Taliban leaders. And I think we could do a lot better job helping to expose that. That might accomplish more than simply military means, because you're not going to be able to kill the ideas that motivate these people.
Interesting. My guest is Ken Ballin, author of the book Terrorists in Love. Ken, what do you want readers to take away from reading your book, Terrorists in Love?
Well, I think readers really, this is the kind of book, Bill, that one has to read in order to take something away from it, because I can give you my reactions or you can have your reactions to it, because it's the raw material of intimate life stories that are absolutely fascinating, that completely contradict what I expected and what I know that anyone else would expect when they read it, that you almost have to read it to take away something. And because it's not a policy book, because it's not didactic or telling people what to think, different people can come away with quite different conclusions.
Well, it is a fantastic read. My guest is Ken Ballin. Ken, you've probably piqued the interest of some of my listeners. If they want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, or even more about your organization, Terror Free Tomorrow, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
The easiest place to go is the name of the book, www.terroristinlove.com. That will link you, tell you all about the book, give you photos and maps and information about it, as well as linking to the organization.
Oh, that is great. Ken, it has been a delight. Thank you so much for being my special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks again. I appreciate being on.
Take care.